Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with two authors of terrific books for middle grade readers. They'll both be appearing at the Louisiana Book Festival coming up November 2nd. Paul Sifkin, president and CEO of Fred Rogers Productions, is the author of Vernon Poche and the Ghosts of New Orleans. And Marty Dumas is the author of three volumes in the Wild Seed Witch series, the most recent of which is Fortunes and Frenemies. She's also the author of the first in a new series, Secret Society of Rebel Girls, Nina and the Mysterious Mailbox. I'm so happy to welcome Paul Sifkin to The Reading Life. Paul grew up in New Orleans near Bayou St. John, rode his bike along the levee, went to Saints games in the Dome, was a reader at St. Louis Cathedral, and watched Mardi Gras parades with his family downtown. But today he lives in Pittsburgh, where he is president and CEO of Fred Rogers Productions. Paul has worked in children's television for 28 years, including 10 at PBS. And today we're celebrating his first novel for young adults, Vernon Poche and the Ghosts of New Orleans. Paul Sifkin, welcome.
Thank you, Susan. I'm so glad to be here. I'm excited to talk about my hometown and the story that I hope will inspire a lot of kids to get out there and learn a little bit more about the city.
So tell us about Vernon Poche and Alicia LaFon and how they come to be in post-Katrina New Orleans. And tell us a little bit about their quest.
Well, I want to start a little bit by saying what kind of brought me to thinking about a middle grade novel about this time period. Mm-hmm. And, you know, recently, what kind of dawned on me, I think because we're entering the 20th year since Hurricane Katrina.
Right.
There are high school graduates who were not alive when Hurricane Katrina happened. So for them, this is history. But I know for anybody who lives in New Orleans, it feels like it was yesterday. And so I felt like, how can I tell the story of why New Orleans matters, to kind of quote Tom Piazza, to a group of children who don't really have any life experience? And I thought the best way to do that is through characters who are their age. I've always loved stories about 12, 13-year-olds who are just old enough to start making decisions, mm-hmm. taking risks, maybe breaking rules. That's kind of how I came to this idea of Vernon Poche and Alicia LaFon, who meet. They're from different parts of the city. They've been impacted by the storm differently, but they're united by this need to find a way back to their family and find a way back to their home. The way that Vernon is introduced is he's coming back early, 2 weeks after the storm hit, because his father is an electrical engineer, and he's going to help get the grid back up and running. But on their way back from Atlanta, his dad says, by the way, when the job's done, we're done. We're moving permanently. Well, Vernon doesn't take this very well, mainly because his mom passed away and is buried in Carrollton Cemetery, and he's promised to visit her on her birthday every year. And it just so happens her birthday is coming up. So on the very first day that they arrive, his dad goes off to work on the grid, and Vernon hops on his bicycle, even though he's not supposed to, and rides through the empty streets to go visit his mom's grave. And that's when he's visited by the first ghost, who says, essentially, if you want to figure out a way to stay, you have to meet some of my friends. And that's sort of the beginning of the journey where he runs into these ghosts. Eventually, his path, as the ghosts take him through the past and through the city, leads him to bumping into Alicia LaFon. She is there because right before the storm, she went to her grandparents' house, live on the West Bank. And if I recall, a lot of the West Bank did not evacuate mm-hmm. from the storm.
That's right.
And she stayed with her grandparents, and her mom was going to come join them, but waited a little too long. And then when she went to come start up the car in front of their house in Lower Ninth Ward, it wouldn't start. And so she said, you know what, we've been through storms before, I'll stay here. But as we know, the flood really devastated that region, and she found herself at the Superdome, and then days later in Houston. Mm-hmm. And so Alicia is without her mom in a different circumstance than Vernon. She has made her way to the French Quarter because her grandparents are vendors there. And even though there's no one to sell souvenirs to, they go into the French Quarter, set up shop so that the National Guard people and the people who are trying to bring the city back can get some refreshments and some supplies if needed. And while she's in the quarter, she wanders off, and Vernon and her bump into each other at, of all places, Lafitte's blacksmith shop. So that's kind of how they get together.
And they have a great, great adventure.
They do.
So one of the things I'm always looking for in children's books is agency. You know, what power do you give kids and how do they use it? And, you know, that age group you're writing for, that's such a moment in a life, you know, when you realize you are capable of making change. And this is something you do wonderfully by having New Orleans be kind of a ghost town with helpers along the way to aid them in this quest for different things and different people. But it's really a quest through New Orleans history.
Well, and I tried to set it up so that they always had a choice, both Vernon and Alicia, about whether or not they wanted to continue sort of following the path, which the ghosts essentially send them on, something called the Dixieland Trail, where they learn from a wide variety of ghosts from the past about sort of what makes the tapestry of the city so important. And, you know, ultimately, what I was hoping was that Vernon and Alicia would kind of represent the optimism and the resilience kind of in the midst of that tragedy that I think allowed New Orleans to continue its recovery and continues to help the city recover, was this need to come back. And one of the ghosts that challenges Vernon early on, Marie Laveau, says, you know, why? Why are you so desperate to stay? And he says, well, this is where I live. And she says, that's not good enough. So you need to find out why this place is worth sticking to. And that's kind of a theme throughout, is that people, traditions, history really stick in New Orleans. And they become, like I said, this sort of interwoven tapestry that creates such a unique culture in the city.
He has such an amazing cast of characters helping him along the way, Vernon does. You chose some remarkable figures from New Orleans history to help him. Marie Laveau, Joe Oliver, Mahalia Jackson, Big Chief Tootie Montana, the Lafitte brothers, Ray Charles, Edgar Degas, Tommy Lafon. I mean, this was like a who's who.
What really kind of brought the choices for who was to appear was, you know, partly geography. You know, Vernon lives in, I think, what was called the sliver by the river after the storm.
Yeah.
Lives uptown. His house was not flooded, and that's why he's allowed to, he's able to sort of ride a certain distance before he gets into the flood zone. Well, not far from where his house was, or, in, you know, his fictional house is the Black Pearl neighborhood. And that was an opportunity to talk about Mahalia Jackson and that historically Black neighborhood and where she came from. You know, the more I thought about Mahalia Jackson sort of being royalty in New Orleans, that led me to think, you know what, we should have King Joe Oliver be with her, even though they were from different times. When you have ghosts, they can kind of know each other. But it was important to me to be able to represent kind of characters from as far back as, you know, Henri Tonti, who, you know, was the guide to LaSalle on his way to try to find him out of the Mississippi, all the way to Alice in Montana, who passed away 2 months before Hurricane Katrina. So it was, I was really trying to get sort of the full scope of these historical figures from the city, and also represent how they often reference one another and their lives are intertwined in a way that I found really surprising as I was doing research for the book. You know, when you're trying to find a way to connect Edgar Degas to Jefferson Davis, it turns out there's a connection. And there were a lot of sort of aha moments as I was researching the characters for the book.
Well, the places come to life, too. Cemeteries, streetcars, the Ursuline Convent, Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop, Dickie Chase, Willie Mays, and Spanish Fort. And statues come to life and speak, too. And so you really cover a lot of territory. I can just imagine you in an office with a map and just pushpins.
Well, I very much so. And also when I come to visit my family in New Orleans, I do drive. I haven't biked it, and I should, but I've driven the trail, right? And and you know, a dream of dreams would be that there are people that read the book and they want to see all the places in the book and they can follow the path that Vernon and Alicia take. And I think that turns out to be a really nice sort of tour of the city that introduces you to the Spanish history and Black history and the sort of pirate culture from New Orleans, as well as architecture and women's history, really tried to sort of bring all those things together in the midst of the story.
Well, we've been talking with Paul Siefkin, whose new novel, for middle grade readers and all ages, is Vernon Poche and the Ghosts of New Orleans. It is wonderful. You can meet him Friday, November 1st at Octavia Books, or Saturday, November 2nd at the Louisiana Book Festival in Baton Rouge. Paul, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Susan. This has been wonderful.
It's such a treat to welcome New Orleans writer Marty Dumas back to The Reading Life. Marty is a prolific writer of children's books, including the Jade and Toussaint The Greatest series, the Seeds of Magic series, and the Little Humans series. Today we're talking about the third book in her Wild Seed Witch series, Fortunes and Frenemies, featuring young Hassani Schecksnyder-Jones, who has the best name of any New Orleans character ever. And Marty has another new book in another new series, The Secret Society of Rebel Girls, Nina and the Mysterious Mailbox. Marty, welcome back. You've been busy.
Thank you so much. I have been busy, and I cannot tell you how much of a zing I get from hearing you say New Orleans writer and welcome back in the same sentence. It feels so good. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Happy to do it. Now, tell us what Hassani and her friends are up to in Fortunes and Frenemies, because you're expanding your magical world in this, and you're also having these young women think about boundaries.
Oh my gosh.
In a really interesting way.
Yes. Okay. So one of the things that I love about having Hassani Marie Schecksnyder-Jones, just so you know how New Orleans that name is, Hassani Marie Schecksnyder-Jones, is that she was unaware of all the magic that was literally within walking distance of her home, like all wrapped around. And now that she is in this world of magic, she's able to see it more and more. So I love it when people say, oh, you got to expand the world. I'm like, oh, no. I got to let you see a little bit more of the world in this story. So one of the things that is happening here is that I always think about when I see stories, like watch movies, read books, and there are witches. For whatever reason, there always seems to be some kind of witches' council. Mm-hmm. And I think to myself, if I had magic, would I allow myself to be governed in that way? And my answer is no. No, I would not. And I can't imagine that witches would fight with each other in the way that we often see them doing. Not that they wouldn't have problems, right? Mm-hmm. But that they would probably solve them differently. And so what we have here is a place where consensus and boundaries are built into the magic. So the Carrollton Courthouse, which is no longer a courthouse and was a school for many, many years, Ben Franklin, right before I got to go there. It's my neighborhood, but I didn't actually get to go to Ben Franklin at the Carrollton Courthouse. And then a middle school for many, many years. It's now a different facility, but it is the home for the Riverside School in Fortunes and Frenemies. Mm-hmm. And it's there because it is on the riverbend. And because magic is life and water is life.
Yes.
Water promotes the magic in this world. And also, it's even more amplified right there in the bend of the river. So Hassani and her friends, who are just going to start school, that's all they're doing. They're going to have a fun, magic-free year at school because previously there had been what was called a sans la vie, which is sort of a throwing together of some Louisiana Creole words for life and also for without, right? Mm-hmm. And so then this place would be a place without life, i.e. without magic, where you couldn't do it. So they were like, oh, it's fine. We're going to have that. But as soon as they get there, this thing explodes. And it doesn't just explode with magic. It also explodes with enemies, or rather, people who were once friends and now are possibly your antagonist for the story. And so they have to navigate that. And I think it's really cool. I really have a lot of fun being able to think about all the ways that when I was younger, I could have used some boosting to be able to navigate social interactions out in the world and also be able to actually find my autonomy, maybe before I was like 35 when it actually did happen. It would have been really cool to have some of the skills and access to things that the kids had in this story.
How long do you let a rivalry go on?
Absolutely, absolutely. And there are obviously witching rivalries, and there are lessons that the witches have learned and grown from themselves. Like, this would be like a little bit lightly spoilery, but it's still pretty early on in the story that you realize that the reason that the magic has been locked up in this place is because the place was once essentially used as a witch's prison. But the witches realized how foolish that is, right? Yeah. Like, that's not actually how we want to live our lives. And so they covered it over and have sort of erased them from the maps in a way that you erase the negative things that you've done to sort of sweep history under the rug a little bit.
Yeah.
But that has pros and cons to it, right? Like, you wouldn't want to be all flagrant and in a way that makes it seem like you're trying to make that seem like a good thing. But also, you don't necessarily want to pretend that it never happened either, so that history doesn't repeat itself.
I'm talking with Marty Dumas, author of Fortunes and Frenemies and the Secret Society of Rebel Girls. Nina and the Magic Mailbox is part of the Secret Society of Rebel Girls series, which is a fairly new
series. It is very new. Yeah. It came out like a week ago as of recording this. So
talk about how that came about and one of the best opening sentences ever. Middle school is so weird. Who could not identify with that at whatever age?
I mean, it's just factual.
So it is.
Like, I'm just like spitting facts. Okay. So in Nina and the Mysterious Mailbox, which is the first book in the Secret Society of Rebel Girls series, we're going to have at least three, maybe more of those books. So then like tons of fun. We have Nina, who is much like me, like kind of a perfect school kid. She's geeky and she has no shame about it whatsoever. She's like on the robotics team. It's like her biggest goal. She's totally achieved it. She's really excited. She does not want to be anybody different. She's not like, oh, I'm so sad I'm a nerd. There's nothing like that, because I never felt that. So like, we're not putting that out in the universe. That's not what's going on. Okay. So Nina, who is also a sits in the front row, hands straight up kind of kid, has a best friend, Maya, who is also a great kid, but like a lot more chill, like very much more loosey-goosey, just like a different personality type. And Nina's best friend gets her in trouble the second week of school. She gets in trouble and big trouble, bad trouble, so that they end up in detention, which is absolutely mortifying for poor Nina. Oh my gosh, she can't. I could not have. She can't. And so the teacher that is over the detention is, she's a little like hippie, like very like feely kind of person. And their school is called Ada Lovelace Middle.
Which I love too. Your interest in technology, once again.
So their school is called Ada Lovelace Middle. And so then the teacher decides that a thing that they should do to be able to sort of recenter themselves in this detention is that they should choose a woman in history to write a letter to. And Nina, being such a good kid, she wants to do it right. She's like, I'm gonna do this assignment. It's gonna be whatever. And the teacher happened to mention Cleopatra. And so Nina, just right off the rip, she just writes a letter to Cleopatra. And it actually kind of makes her feel better, because, you know, writing things out, writing your feelings out in a journal or whatever, like it can really help you to feel better. So she feels a little bit better. Well, she and her friend are walking home through the long cut, which is them going around the woods instead of just walking the block, like as they should. And as they are walking through the woods, they spot a mailbox, which her friend Maya, who is an artist, is convinced is an art installation. She's seen something on the internet, like where the people put like a mailbox and then they had a dragon and the dragon burned up all the letters. And so she's like, yeah, this is definitely an art installation. The letters are going to burn up. So Nina puts her letter to Cleopatra in the mailbox. And the next morning, rolling out of her mailbox is a giant papyrus scroll, because Cleopatra wrote back.
I love that. That is such a great moment.
Oh, yay.
You know,
I mean, you're writing. Writing is such a weird job, because you're literally sitting alone at a table hallucinating things, and you hope it plays out. for other people.
Here's
the way
the
it's
papyrus.
Playing out
for you. I mean, but I love that they start this correspondence across 2,000 years and make this connection.
Yes.
That's the point of your work anyway. To make those connections.
Absolutely. To make the connections and to find the connections and where they support you. So one of the things that I grappled with a little bit in writing this Secret Society series is the idea that like kids today have so much access to information. Mm-hmm. They have a ridiculous amount of information at their fingertips. It's almost indigestible. And the idea that like there might be something that Cleopatra could say in a letter that was just for you, that you couldn't find by Googling Cleopatra, yeah, was really core in me being like, no, this series can definitely work. So yeah, no, absolutely. They have to find that thing. Now, the geeky part of me absolutely loves like the mechanics of figuring out exactly how that thing would work. And I did have a lot of fun with that. I won't lay it all out because that is part of like the reveal, the layering in the mm-hmm. story, but it is fun. And believe me, there were diagrams, there are charts, like there's a lot that has gone into it.
You know, something gels in both these books. I mean, you have these themes that you have really made your own, you know, science, technology, engineering, art, and math, STEAM. Those are your girls. They're out there doing all these things and owning your own magic, nurturing friendships, female empowerment, and supporting each other. It's just a pleasure to see because the energy propels you through the book. I mean, bad things happen. Life isn't perfect, but you're okay. You're going to be okay.
But you're going to be okay, you know, when you find your people. And that's the hard part. I'm not saying that that is an easy thing to do, right? Part of what you have to do to find your people is to be your people, right? To yeah. be the kind of person that you want around you, to be a good friend, to be a listening person, an empathetic person, a person who would do a listening tour, right? And then it's easier to draw those kinds of people to you. But once you have them, like, I promise you, you're going to be good.
We've been talking with Marty Dumas, who has two new books out, Fortunes and Frenemies, Wild Seed Witch Book 3, and Secret Society of Rebel Girls, Nina and the Mysterious Mailbox. You can meet her at the Po' Boy Festival and the Louisiana Book Festival November 2nd. Marty, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You're so awesome.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Johnette Downing reads from and signs Petit Pierre and His Wild Adventure, Saturday, October 26th at 10:30 at Octavia Books. L'Oreal Ivory presents a story time, Who Let the Nerves Out, Saturday, October 26th at 11 at Garden District Bookshop. Blue Cypress Books presents a full day of author signing Sunday, October 27th at the Po' Boy Festival on Oak Street. Here's the lineup. At 10:30, Chris Clarkson, author of Chloe and the Fireflies. At 11, Chris Granger, Susan Langenhennig, and John Pope, contributors to Painting the Town. At 11:30, Adam Dennis, author of Gary and His Little Friend Jerry. At 12:30, Rachel Marsh, author of Rougarou Magic. At 1, Marty Dumas, author of the Wild Seed Witch series. At 1:30, Eric Cook, author of Modern Creole, A Taste of New Orleans Culture and Cuisine. At 2:30, Alexander Navarre Davis and Shannon Kelly Atwater, author and illustrator of Clyde the Giant Crawfish. And at 3:30, Mark Rosenbaum, author and creator of NOLA Portraits. Elizabeth Earnshaw discusses and signs Till Stress Do Us Part, Sunday, October 27th at 4 at the Garden District Bookshop. Olivia Worley discusses and signs The Debutantes, Tuesday, October 29th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Sharon Keating discusses and signs Hauntingly Good Spirits, Wednesday, October 30th at 5 at Garden District Bookshop. Cameron Hall and her co-author present a brunch and books, tasting and signing, Saturday, November 2nd from 1 to 3 at Baldwin & Company. This is a ticketed event. The Friends of the Jefferson Public Library hold their big book sale Friday through Sunday, October 25th through 27th, at the Pontchartrain Center on Williams Boulevard at the Lake in Kenner. Hours are Friday and Saturday from 10 to 7, and Sunday from noon to 5. This is one of the largest book sales in the New Orleans area. Cash and credit or debit cards only. Time to vote for the next One Book, One New Orleans selection. Cast your vote at the website or Facebook page for one of the following three finalists: Letting in Air and Light by Teresa Tumanello Brader, Nola Face, A Latina's Life in the Big Easy by Brooke Champagne, or Daughters of the New Year by E.M. Tran. And get ready for the Louisiana Book Festival coming up November 2nd, 9 to 4 in downtown Baton Rouge and on the Capitol grounds. The festival is free and open to the public with more than 200 authors on hand to entertain readers of all ages and activities for children and teenagers. This is the festival's 20th year. The Louisiana Writer Award will be presented to Baton Rouge area native poet David Kirby, longtime professor at Florida State University, and the festival's One Book, One Festival program, led by Dr. Gary Richard, will feature Eudora Welty's The Optimist's Daughter. Author and illustrator William Joyce will debut the anxiously awaited Rocket Puppies, his first book in 8 years. Ashley Elston returns with her adult debut novel, First Lie Wins, a New York Times bestseller. The festival will host the premiere of Books Across America, a documentary from filmmaker Mason Engel. He travels to 50 states, reads 50 books, interviews 50 authors in 50 days. Among those featured is Louisiana's own Maurice Carlos Ruffin. For more information about the festival and the complete schedule, visit louisianabookfestival.org or check out the festival's Facebook page. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.